there. Thank you for joining me today. I'm excited for this because you're actually one of the channels that when I didn't even realize I was getting into crypto, I found, like, it just kind of all of a sudden fell on me, and I was looking up some pretty basic things to get myself started, and you were one of the first people that I found. So I'm excited about this, and I thank you for coming on today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for joining me. I've I think we're probably the two biggest crypto accounts on TikTok, and so that's how I kind of found out about you. And you know, definitely an honor and appreciate the support for you watching my channel. And you know, I think that's really cool.
Yeah. I one of the things I remember was just your tips early on when I guess it was before we really entered the bull cycle and the bull run. And then it's been interesting looking back and seeing how that helped me. So was there like anyone, like, I'm trying to think back because this seems like such a new space. When you were entering the space, was there like anyone online doing this, or was it just kind of like you figuring out yourself in a free for all?
Yeah, so it kind of how I got into all this was I first bought Bitcoin back in 2012, and no, there was no one at that point. You know, there was nobody talking about crypto really. I think the first crypto YouTube channel was created in 2014, I think. Maybe Chris DeRose was doing a show in 2012. There was a podcast, can't remember when he started. But, you know, that's what I tell people a lot is I didn't understand what I was getting into because there just wasn't educational resources out there. So fast forward to 2016 and 2017 when I started getting a little more into it. You know, Crypto Daily was a guy that I watched a lot. I really loved his channel when he started. You know, Crypto Lark, now he goes by Lark Davis on YouTube. He was around then as well. But really kind of nobody at that point was pushing this narrative that the bull market was going to end in 2017. Mm. It was all, you know, and I think that was the biggest mistake that a lot of the YouTubers during that time made, not those two guys specifically, but a lot of other ones, is that they just kept pushing that the market was bullish even when it was very clearly into a bear market. And I think that they had lost a lot of credibility through that. And that's why a lot of those channels that were big during that time, they've really suffered because a lot of people gave up on those channels. Mm. And I think that one thing that I never want to do is say that we're in a bull market when we're not. And so I spent a lot of time and after I lost all my money in 2018, you know, that I made in 2017 due to the bear market, like I spent a lot of time figuring out why and trying to look at, okay, how can we prevent this from happening again? And so for me, it was doing a lot of research, really studying the Bitcoin cycles. And one of the interesting things was, it was a lot of the people that I didn't like during 2017 and 2018 that were saying things like, hey guys, this will end. Hey guys, Bitcoin can go down to 3,000. I was like, these guys are crazy. I don't want to listen to this. And then lo and behold, those were the people that were actually right. And so I really learned, you know, to kind of get over your own bias and look at people that have other opinions, because basically every negative prediction that those people made ended up coming to pass. Like even Charlie Lee, when he sold all of his Litecoin in December 2017, he said, if you can't handle Litecoin, you know, dropping all the way down to $20 from 360, then you won't make it in this market. And I was like, yeah, right. And then I think Litecoin did drop all the way down to like, you know, $25 or something like that. So, you know, that's what pushed me on this path of really trying to understand the Bitcoin cycles and how it plays out.
Yeah. Do you think that those bigger accounts that were like kind of in denial that we were no longer, that you were no longer in a bull cycle at that time, do you think that they honestly believe that, or was there like a reason? Did it just keep their accounts growing to be overly euphoric and like never have anything poor to say about the market?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of both. Yeah. I think that there's definitely some people that kind of knew where it was going, especially on Twitter. Like they knew where it was going, but like, let's face facts, in the world of YouTube and crypto influencing, if you will, when the market is bullish, you're making more money. And so your bottom line is affected by the market in so many different ways that it's in your best interest to always say it's bullish. And, you know, I refuse to be like that. Like I refuse, one thing I hate is, you know, intellectual dishonesty. A lot of people know if they watch my channel, like I can't stand when people say stuff they don't believe. Yeah. And so I could never, you know, with a good conscience come on my channel and say that. But I think there's definitely a bigger group of YouTubers during that time that they really bought into their own hype and they bought into the hype of the market. And, you know, I was talking to, I was actually talking to my stepdad yesterday. We had a little Mother's Day celebration and I was talking to him because he's done very well in this market. A lot of my family has done really well in this market. And I basically, for years of talking about crypto, they finally got in back, I think, around November, September, October, November. So things have worked out really well for them. But I remember telling him, we went to my brother's college graduation party in December of 2017. And I tried, it was literally the day the market peaked. And I tried to convince him to get in Bitcoin at the peak of the market. And he was like, no, there's no way. Like, it's not going to keep going up. And I was like, yeah, right. It's going to keep crushing it. You know, it's here. And I remember telling him, like, you don't realize we now have futures contracts on Bitcoin. Like, this is going to last forever at this point, because that's what all the people were saying at the time. And he was right and I was wrong. You know, ultimately the prices dropped and they did go back up. But it was like at that time, we just thought that the institutional money coming in was going to push the market further. We didn't realize that was actually the sign that it was over and that they were going to push the prices down to accumulate for the bear market. So just, it was a very interesting time back then. So I say all that to say that a lot of people, like even myself at the time, had an internal bias, not even realizing it, that like just to be bullish, because we believed in crypto, you believe in the long term, and it's hard to see when things are going so well that eventually they're going to drop back down, but they always do.
With that institutional like pressure to lower the price, do you think that's what's happening right now?
Well, right now we're seeing, this is a much different place than where we were at in 2017. And I do think eventually we will hit a point in this bull run where it ends and it turns into a bear market. I think that you're seeing a lot of the corporations and the, you know, we didn't suspect that the corporations were going to jump in and put Bitcoin in their treasury.
Right.
Left field. I mean, you could kind of like, from a common sense standpoint, assume that that might happen, but wasn't something that people really talked about, you know, MicroStrategy jumping in. Obviously we knew Grayscale, what they were doing, but MicroStrategy, Tesla, PayPal, companies like that kind of just came out of nowhere. So there definitely is manipulation on the market. And I think right now it's more about accumulating in the short term, like trying to get Bitcoin around the $50,000 price point, because they all know that it's going to rip later this year. So it's a little bit different as opposed to, I remember Crypto Daily. I mean, that was what Crypto Daily was, a guy I patterned my channel after. I mean, and I know him now, which is very surreal to have conversations with him in real life. Because like I just looked at him like he was the greatest thing ever back then. And I remember he made a video in early 2018 talking about this, where he said that the thing about the institutional money is, if you imagine a train leaving a station, the institutions have the power to kind of like take a lasso and you know, get it on the train and pull it back to the station. And that's what we saw during that time. But now it's like, you know, the bull's out of the pen. You know, like it's moving so quickly with so much momentum that they kind of have to just like take little pulls, because the overall market is so bullish, they can't pull it back. And, you know, you've got companies like MicroStrategy, PayPal and Square and Tesla that are buying so much Bitcoin that that's kind of like evening out almost a lot of the institutional buys. I mean, MicroStrategy is the number two overall Bitcoin holder as far as an entity goes. I mean, I believe there are some whales with more. I mean, obviously we know Satoshi's wallet has more and things like that, but in terms of corporate entities or institutional entities, they're the number two holder. So, you know, if they're not selling their Bitcoin, then that's having a big effect on the market. So that's kind of how I see it right now. I don't think right now we're going to see a lot of downward pressure. I think one thing to keep in mind though, is Ethereum. So right now Ethereum's extremely bullish. Like, we've got so much use case, there's applications, DeFi, the price has been exploding. But right now, for the first time ever, we're seeing that institutional money coming into Ethereum. So, you know, a lot of us think that Bitcoin and Ethereum aren't going to drop as far in the bear market. Maybe like Bitcoin, instead of 85%, it falls 60 to 65%. For Ethereum, maybe instead of falling 95%, it falls 80%. But the thing to keep in mind is now that we do have the futures contracts and a lot of the, you know, institutional mechanisms to get into crypto, now it's starting for Ethereum the same way we saw it for Bitcoin in 2017. You know, maybe that means in the bear market, they do push down Ethereum much further to accumulate on the institutional side. So that's kind of how I see it all in the big picture right now for what's happening. But, you know, overall, in the long term, it's all bullish stuff.
Yeah. What do you think about the super cycle narrative? Is that something you buy into, even amidst knowing that we will correct at some point?
Yeah, I think the super cycle narrative is very scary. And of course, like, you know, we're just like anybody else that once clicks on YouTube. I mean, we might put super cycle in a video because it gets, you know, people to come watch. But I'm never going to tell you that I believe that's where it's going, because the super cycle narrative is the same narrative that got people crushed in 2018.
Was it around then?
You can always... What's that?
Was it around then? Was the same super cycle, like...
So here's something that's very interesting. When you look throughout the history of Bitcoin, whenever there's a big event, a transfer between a bear market to a bull market, transfer from a bull market to a bear market, around the Bitcoin halving every 4 years, if you go back and you do Google, like time-sensitive Google searches for those events, like if you go back and look at stories about the halving in 2016, you will see the exact same narratives in 2016 that we saw in 2020, which was everybody said in 2020, like, oh, this time the price isn't going to go up as much because the halving is already baked in because everybody knows that it's coming. You go look at 2016, you read the exact same articles. And so kind of the same thing for the bull markets and the bear markets. Like in the bear market, in the depths, you can go back and do time-sensitive searches and find people thought it was never coming back. And then it always comes back because everything's so cyclical. So that was definitely a narrative that was going on in 2017, was the institutions are here. We've got ETFs coming, which still haven't been approved 4 years later. You know, like all of these narratives now were the same then. And it's just like everybody can't get outside of the box. You have to remember markets are 100% psychological. That's why you see the same patterns repeating over and over again. So as far as, you know, going forward, you know, this is what I kind of say about it. Like, would I love a Bitcoin super cycle where the price goes up to $1 million and everybody just makes money every day for the next 5 years? Great. I would love that. That would be awesome. But it's, I feel like with the size of our channel, I've got a responsibility, number one, to tell people what I honestly believe. And number two, to prepare them for the worst case scenario. Because, I mean, not that a bear market's a worst case scenario. And in a lot of ways, that's when people make the most money. That's when people really get, you know, generational wealth. Is through the bear markets. But of course, during a bull market, people don't want to hear that because they're happy, you know, because the prices are going up. But, you know, what always happens is that we get to a, people don't understand how much the market is driven by the fundamentals of Bitcoin halving and the supply shock and the cut in production. That's really actually what drives this market. The awareness about Bitcoin is very important in that, obviously. The adoption of Bitcoin is very important in that. But I just can't see a world, you know, in the near future where we don't have that. And if I were to tell people I believe Bitcoin's going to go up for a super cycle like Michael Saylor does for the next 3 or 4 years, and then we go in a bear market, people are going to be way more hurt than if I tell them I believe a bear market is coming. All of the history points to that. We know about when it should be happening at the end of this year. And if people were to sell early but not sell out 100% of their positions, I recommend everybody keep some crypto even at the top of the market in case we're wrong. You're going to be a lot better off holding 10% of the crypto that you have now through a super cycle than you will be if you hold 100% of your crypto and a bear market comes, you'll lose 90%. So, you know, I like to prepare people for what's coming. And we just, everything where people say it's a super cycle, it's all based off feeling. It's all based off of emotion. There's literally nothing in the fundamentals of Bitcoin that would say that. And I was recently on a show where, you know, almost everybody on the show was saying like, no, there's going to be no bear market. We're in a super cycle. It's going to keep going up forever. And it was very concerning to me. So I want to be the voice of reason, and I want to prepare people because I went through it and I experienced it, and there's nothing worse than losing all your money.
Right. I think that's important because similarly, I've heard a lot of narratives both in support of and questioning the super cycle, and this is weird, but like my philosophy student brain is like kind of like the concept of free will. Whether or not it exists, it doesn't really matter because there will be ups and downs even within a super cycle, in my opinion, so that you probably don't want to act as if it's inevitable, and you'd want to take precautions to maximize your wealth preservation alongside it. What in particular would you tell someone who, like myself, entered kind of right before but really accumulated during the midst of this bull cycle and is not looking to, I mean, there's some things I obviously will hold through the bear market because I believe in them for the long term, like some of my Bitcoin and other holdings, but what advice would you tell us to keep in mind in terms of an exit strategy or wealth preservation going from bull into a bear market?
Yeah, I definitely tell people, number one, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. You know, like, if you've made a bunch of money, keep that money. You know, like, you definitely don't want to get to a point. And I told this story last week on a show I think I was on, talking about how, you know, my goal for, like, my family and for what I wanted to do when I started this channel was, when I went full time into crypto, I sold my house and we rented for a while. And my goal was to get enough money in cash to buy a house. Now, I live in the Atlanta area, so it's, you know, we were looking at about $300,000, not in San Francisco or New York, you know, where you need millions of dollars to buy a house. But I wanted $300,000 at one time to buy it. And so what happened was, in September of last year, in August, September of last year, I did it. I had that much money, and I still had more money than that in the market. I had probably about $500,000. And I was thinking to myself, like, wow, like, I've got enough money to actually do it right now. But man, this money could be worth so much more in the future. And I just sat there, and it was hard for me because there were a lot of coins I had to sell that I didn't want to sell. But I was like, I did it. I met my goal. And I feel like if I had made the decision not to do that, even though, like, down the road, that money would have been worth more. But I had done it. Like, greed is the thing that kills people. And so for me to be able to achieve my goal and do what I want to do, like, as hard as it was for me to sell a lot of my crypto at that time, like, I decided it was worth it to say that I met that goal and just take what I had and be happy with it. And then down the road, if it's worth a lot more, like, I still had this house for my family, and that was worth, you know, more than anything. And so for me, it's telling people, like, just don't be too greedy. Greed is what kills people in this market. When you've got money, when you make profits, especially if you made six figures or more, like, you do not want to ride that back down. You know, Peter McCormick was just on Vice last week talking about how he made $1 million in 2017 and lost it in 2018, riding it all the way down to the bear cycle. I'm sure he's doing fine now, but, you know, he was actually negative because of taxes and stuff like that. And that is a lesson that people have got to learn. And that's why I preach a lot of this exit strategy. I preach a lot about knowing a bear market is coming, feeling a bear market is coming, because you don't want to be in that spot where you ride it all the way up and ride it all the way down. So for me, the exit strategy is kind of like this. When we need things here, because I run, you know, now I've got an office. We just bought a brand new building. I've got about 30 employees right now. We're going to expand even more employees. Like, for me, it's about making sure we have money set aside for payroll, making sure we've got money set aside for our expenses. When we need to buy that building, we pulled the money out and we bought it. Like, not just being too crazy about being scared to pull money out for things that you need, because these are things that we're locking away: real estate investments, a stock portfolio. Like, these are things that we're locking away. We are pulling profits every time we do that. Now, as we get closer to the end of the summer, so around July to August, most likely August, that is when people really need to start considering what they want to do with their profits. And so, you know, I suggest real world assets are great. Real estate is great. There could be a housing bubble coming at some point, so you don't want to probably go too heavy in that. But those are real assets that nobody can take away from you, even if Bitcoin drops 85%. So those are things to start looking at. Everybody talks about dollar cost averaging in. Well, dollar cost averaging out is also a good thing. So pick a percentage of your profits that you want to pull out every month, every week, whatever it is. And once July and August hits, you start looking at doing some of that, even though it's painful to look later on and be like, oh, well, it kept going up. I could have made more money. It's always going to be much more painful to not do that and write it back down. I can't remember exactly who it was, but I was listening to somebody talk about, or maybe it was just a quote, talking about how to handle, you know, exiting markets. And you just have to weigh the regret. Will you regret more not taking the profits now at this price and it goes up? Or will you regret more later if you don't take the profits and the price drops? Like, what is going to punch you in the gut more? And, you know, I've been through it. I know what it is. I know for me, it's not taking the profits. So that's kind of how we look at things. We have a date of September 28th is the end of this bull cycle. That's based on something called the Golden Bull Ratio, which compares the amount of time between the bottom of the market and the halving, and the halving and the top of the market. It's a 51 to 49% ratio. We know about how many candles that should be. That should put the peak of the Bitcoin bull market It's September 28th. The date is not super important. Either look about a week ahead or a week behind that. And that's about when we think Bitcoin will top out. Altcoins could run for another 3 to 6 weeks. So sometime between Halloween and Thanksgiving. And those are dates we're looking at. And we are, I lost your camera there.
We're all good. I'm still here. I just, okay, my setup just fell over. I'm here though. You can keep going.
Okay.
Oh my God.
So those are dates that we're looking at, and we really do legitimately weigh those dates out as really important, kind of time sensitive things for us. So the closer we get to those dates, the more likely we're going to be to pull stuff out of the market.
Awesome. Okay, I'm back. My camera's still falling. There we go. Let me turn this back on. Awesome. So yeah, that's actually in line kind of with what I already had on my mind, because my birthday is the end of August, and based on what's already happened and where things are going, that's kind of where, if I measure my expenses against my savings, because crypto is just wildly performing better than, you know, any kind of day-to-day kind of fiat profit. End of August was kind of when I was looking at, that's really when I'll need to start cycling out. And was there anything in particular that you wish you would have known in the previous bull cycle that is like, don't do this, I learned this, or I wish I would have done this differently in terms of exiting or not holding things through the bear market when things are down 80-90%?
Well, I mean, I think like the number one piece of education that people need to have is understanding the Bitcoin cycles. And so I didn't have that. I had already technically been through, two full cycles in 2017. But I had, by going through cycles, what I mean is watching the price of Bitcoin through the cycles. Because I bought Bitcoin in 2012. I sold it all in 2013, actually just a couple months before the Mt. Gox crash.
Oh, wow.
So I would have lost it all in that anyways. Yeah, so I actually do have a small Mt. Gox claim, which is pretty interesting. But so after that, for the next 3 years, you know, I really watched the Bitcoin prices. I would see them go up and down, but I wasn't doing like research on educating myself about understanding it was a cycle. And of course, earlier on, the cycles weren't as apparent as they are now that we're on the fourth one. So really the biggest thing I tell people is get educated on those cycles and really just educate yourself, period. Because if I would have been educated in 2012, what I was looking at, I would have been worth 8 figures just on the amount that I bought that year alone that I was using to pay for a software. I would have been way better off keeping the Bitcoin. So really it's all about getting educated. And, you know, we've already talked extensively about taking profits and things like that. I mean, obviously those are things that you gotta kind of learn. But I gave another clue earlier on to something that I would definitely suggest, which is don't just listen to people you agree with. Watch people that disagree with you. Listen to people that disagree. You know, we've been doing this show on my channel called Around the Blockchain every day at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we get a lot of different opinions. And sometimes people in my chat, they're like offended when somebody disagrees with me on something. And I'm like, you know, the thing is, you got to have those perspectives.
Yeah.
That's why we do that show, is to be able to listen to more people, because I was not listening to the people that were telling me not necessarily what I needed to hear, but what was truth back in 2017. Like I remember like when Charlie Lee said, you can't handle, you know, Litecoin at 20 bucks. I was like, this guy's off his rocker. There is no way it's going down that low. That's crazy. And it made me like not even want to listen to anything he said on Twitter. If there's anything that you read that gives you that visceral of a reaction, you should pay attention to that.
Totally. That's a good point. Particularly in over the past year, stumbling upon many different kinds of crypto YouTubers, I've definitely found that some of the more, actually for me, it's the hyper bullish takes where I'm like, whoa, like that looks, because I just tend to be more skeptical. Where I, you know, I pay attention to those because I'm like, maybe it's worth listening to someone thinking that Bitcoin will be at 100K, said that that would happen in February, you know, didn't happen. I didn't agree with it, but it was interesting that I was, had kind of was bothered by that. And I think that's a good point, because I see it as well, that even times when maybe me or someone else is clearly joking about some hyperbolic claim about the price, people still have such a huge reaction. So I think that it's important to remember that it's all energy in a way. You know, this is, if you're in this field, it's not just your income, it's literally the means that you're working with. So not a point in getting super riled up. In terms of your trading and investing, is there a way that you cycle through getting gains on smaller cap altcoins, and then do you funnel those directly into ETH or Bitcoin? Do you have a certain strategy around that?
Well, we're not to the point yet where we are doing that. Now, we're obviously, we get a lot of good opportunities in terms of like seed rounds and private investments. And so some of those we certainly do funnel into Ethereum. That's stuff that we use in a lot of times to make the bigger purchases, because we don't want to pull money out of Bitcoin or Ethereum. Sometimes you get some projects that just absolutely crush it, and you got to take profits on some of those. And so, you know, we're always moving those profits over to, you know, Bitcoin or Ethereum. Right now, mostly ETH is what we move it over to. You know, but we also have, you know, referral money and different stuff that comes in, and we take all of that referral money and we pile it into you know, top 50 projects pretty much. But we don't sell, once we get into top 50 projects, unless something just has an absolutely stupid run, we're like Dogecoin, we're not moving it out at this point. Like even Dogecoin, when it went, you know, it's funny, Dogecoin's the first coin of this year that exceeded my super bullish Moonboy prediction for it, which was 25 cents. And of course, it's absolutely crushed that. If things start to get above my price predictions, like it's a good time to take profit. I know that. But even with Dogecoin, like we took those profits and we moved it into, I moved it into Nano, which hasn't really had a huge pump yet, hasn't exceeded all time highs. And then we put, I put like 50K into Elrond, because that's another one I think is going to have a really good pump. So once it kind of makes it into those coins that we really like, Solana, VeChain, obviously Bitcoin, Ethereum, Cardano, Polkadot, Binance Coin, it doesn't come out of that. Like once we get it in those major ones that we love, we keep it there. It's funny, if I were to go back over the summer, you know, a lot of the money I made was kind of like degenning into these Uniswap coins when DeFi was just absolutely crushing it. And then, of course, the Uniswap airdrop, which is worth so much. I had like, I think, 6 or 7 of those airdrops on different wallets. I still may have some out there. I don't even know. We just have, just so many different addresses. So with a lot of that stuff, that was really, you know, me trying to like make as much money as possible. Now we're kind of in a spot where this bull run has been so good to us financially that it's more about like hedging. It's more work than it's worth really for us to just go down, you know, Binance Smart Chain and just start putting money into every project. We do have actually a team of people here. We got 2 different guys that do some of that. You know, we give them money, and then we just say, go put it into whatever you want to put it into. Like just in the last, I think, 3 weeks, they doubled it. They 2x'd all, you know, it was pretty good. It was like 100K to 200K in just a few weeks by using some of those strategies, because it's just not something that, like, I'm personally that interested in doing anymore, because it's just, it's so much work. And then, you know, you got to factor in rug pulls and stuff like that. And we also, you know, as we've gotten bigger as a channel, we're much more, like, we realize the responsibility that we have being the largest crypto channel, and we don't want, like, I may go degen into something and on a low cap that might be a rug pull. I might put money into that, but I'll never talk about it, because I don't want other people doing that, because it is so risky. So that's why on the channel, we really stick pretty much to the top 100 coins. Sometimes we'll go a little bit lower, 200, 300. And we got some partner projects that are older projects that we, you know, might be advisors for. We know those projects are good and legit, so we'll talk about that stuff. But you know, there's a lot of money to be made. I mean, there was a story of a guy who, I can't remember exactly how many it was. I think he turned like 10 ETH into $1 million by going into, and this was back when ETH was $200 or $300 over the summer. He turned it in 10 of those into $1 million, like going into just every project on those launching on Uniswap and Dex tools and all that. So there is a strategy there. But for newer people, like, that's a really good recipe to get wrecked. So that's why we try to stay away from talking about a lot of that.
Totally, totally. I'm glad, actually, that during, like, DeFi summer and everything, I was pretty openly like, I don't feel ready to dive into this. Like, that, I don't understand all the terms. And then this more recent, like, BSC meme coin craze, I was like, you know, I'll play a little bit, but it's tiring because you have to watch those charts so closely.
It is so exhausting.
It's so exhausting that even though basically I took my Doge profits, turned it into BNB to use for that, and then have funneled all that back into BNB, it is so much more tiring than I think it's worth, where it felt like I was on a vacation but exhausted because I had to cancel things, I had to stay up. I would wake up to rug pulls and be like, guys, why didn't anyone tell me? And they're like, we told you, you were just, it was 3 a.m. in New York, like you didn't hear. And I'm learning also that like if I am degenning into something that is, there's a, even on PooCoin, there's a warning that the dev owns 70% of all the tokens. You know, there's a responsibility where you could mean well by saying that you're getting into this, but that could bleed off into people who have no idea what they're doing, putting a substantial amount into that. You're so right with saying that there's now considerations where, unless it's like a top 50 or even a newer project that's endorsed by other connections that are similar to that, there's some extreme learning curve that I think is a gap to be filled in the space that I even was impressed by being on TikTok and seeing these teenagers describing how to go on PancakeSwap and buy all these coins, because I was like, that's
incredible.
That's frankly advanced. And I had like my friends who were older than me who were much more advanced traders being like, how do I buy this? So are there any projects or any spaces in the field, like any narratives that you particularly would keep an eye on to last through the bull market into the bear market, like some things that you were just almost eternally or more sustainably bullish on that aren't just euphoria and hype?
It's hard because the entire market is euphoria and hype, you know, like that's what it's literally based on. So it's hard to look at things that could be, you know, bear market proof. It's actually funny, like we're actually researching some of that stuff right now because it would make for a great video if we could find something, but I can't once again come on here and be, you know, intellectually dishonest with people and say this coin is definitely bear market proof, because, you know, we don't know. The interesting thing to me is DeFi and NFTs, and of course NFTs are technically a part of DeFi because they're decentralized exchanges, except it's for, you know, non-fungible tokens instead of regular tokens. But we don't know how these are going to react in the beginning of a bear market, because DeFi was pretty much created as a space about halfway through 2019, after the market had already bottomed and stuff like that. Right now, what we're seeing with Ethereum, this is one thing that does make me a little more bullish on Ethereum, even though we do have the institutional kind of down pull possibly, you know, hanging around in the shadows, is that I did read an article this weekend that was about the two things that Ethereum has going for it that it didn't have going before. And number one was the institutional money. And then the number two thing was decentralized finance. And it was talking a lot about how the applications built on Ethereum, they're getting use. And it's going to be really interesting to see how some of these staking projects turn out over the bear market, where people are able to stake stable coins. Now, if you're staking Ethereum and it drops 65%, like you can get 20% returns and still be in the negative. But with stable coins, that's not really the case. I mean, they're going to be pegged to the value US dollar. And of course, you know, the hyperinflation or inflation, that's a whole different, you know, conversation about USD. But just in terms of the actual dollar value, like it's not going to go down. So will they offer less returns during the bear market? We don't know. So any projects that are kind of built around that, like Celsius, for instance, or BlockFi, BlockFi doesn't necessarily have a token, but, you know, other projects that are built around that kind of ideal, it'll be really interesting to see what happens with them. With NFTs, once again, we don't know at all how they're going to react during the bear market, because NFTs weren't even a space until this year. Now, technically they were. We had Engine, we had Wax, but there was no mainstream element to it. And we now know, of course, the mainstream is all over NFTs. I mean, we're talking to crazy celebrities and crazy athletes, you know, very high level about doing NFTs for them. And so there's something that they're going to be interested in. A lot of companies are very interested in. So we don't know how those are going to perform. Kind of what I could see happening for NFTs, though, is the actual value of the projects going down like normal in the bear market, but maybe some of the collectibles still retaining their value, because it's kind of a dual market there. It's not just one thing. So those are two things I look at that are definitely have potential But you know, people just have to understand the downward momentum of the bear market. I mean, it's absolutely crazy, and it touches everything. So the one I will tell you, the one space I'm really interested in is decentralized oracles, because all throughout the bear market, Chainlink ran counter to the bear market.
Right.
And Chainlink has actually had not as big gains in the bull market as it had in the bear market. And I think that there could be a lesson there, which is decentralized oracles trying to get businesses on blockchain, syncing up their data feeds. It's a real world use case that's getting actual usage. So we could see something develop where you do have things like, maybe it's supply chain tracking, maybe it's decentralized oracles, where things that are actually getting used, they get more recognized in the bear market, so they do a little better. But finding a coin that performs well in the bear market is like finding a unicorn. So
yeah, that's something that I've been considering a lot, because I don't know, I think really far ahead. And so if we're in a bull market, I'm thinking bear market, and if we're in a bear market, I'm trying to think of like, what can I accumulate for the bull market. And I have, similarly, I have turned my eye, whether it is with pre-sales or partnerships and just overall interest, to, is this going to not necessarily withstand, but will this last during the bear market? And I think that that's where utility and stores of value come in handy. And I agree with the NFT projects themselves maybe obviously going down, but maybe NFTs, similar to real estate, become a good store of value. If you have something really valuable, you know, put your profits into NFTs. Not financial advice. I don't think I'm even going to do this really, but like, or maybe honestly, who knows, we'll see. But putting, you know, locking some profits into something that's a store of value, and then also thinking of projects that I think have like, my thesis is kind of like, can this provide value to normies or people who aren't into DeFi? And there are certain projects that I think really will be doing that. And I think Chainlink is I was thinking the same thing, that Chainlink did perform really well during the bear market. And this time around, it's kind of like, what's happening there?
I know.
But yeah, I agree. So during like last bear market, did you essentially like hold everything down, like as it was going down, or like, was that what,
I held it all the way down, you know, and and I would find some things during the bear market that would have like some shorter term potential. Like one coin I was really bullish on was ZRX, which, you know, I was about 3 years too early on. But ZRX, which is a protocol that like I believe One Inch uses, I think they use it. One of the big exchanges, like, it's built on 0x protocol. It may not be that one, but it's basically an ERC-20 swapping mechanism. And so I was really bullish on it because it was supposedly, along with Basic Attention Token, going to be like the next coins to get listed on Coinbase. So basically the way Coinbase worked is, in 2016, only Bitcoin was available. Towards the end of 2016, I think, or maybe early 2017, Ethereum got listed, and then later on Litecoin got listed, and then they did the Bitcoin Cash fork in December. And XRP, a lot of people may not know this if you weren't there during that time, the reason why XRP went up so much, all the way to $3.20 or whatever it was because the narrative was built that it was the next coin going on Coinbase. And it did not get listed on Coinbase. In fact, a lot of people can point back to, I think it was January 6th or the 2nd or maybe the 8th. It was the first week or so of January. Brian Armstrong from Coinbase came out and made a tweet saying that they had not made any decisions on new assets. And so that was actually the beginning of the bear market. That was the day the XRP peaked out, and then it pushed the price way back down, and then it never recovered. So getting listed on Coinbase was a really, really, really strong narrative at that time. It still is. And then they listed Ethereum Classic, which is kind of funny, but they listed Ethereum Classic, I think, in June of 2018. And the next batch was supposed to be ZRX and Basic Attention Token. And so I started piling all kinds of money in them. And they did get listed. It would have been, I believe, in July of 2018. And it did absolutely nothing. So the price went up like just a little bit. And then it was around that time, or maybe before that, I had a bunch of ZRX that got hacked in a phishing scam I fell for, which I made a lot of mistakes back then. And so I put all of this money into it, and then it got hacked. And so I lost it all. And that was basically, I'd held everything all the way down. And then I moved it over to ZRX. It like pumped, and I was like, yes, here we go, bull market, getting all the money back. And then I lost all that too. Yeah. So It was a tough time back then, but you know, trying to find things, you're better off. Like here's the honest truth of it. The cycle that we've seen is the Bitcoin halving event occurs, the price goes up for the next year and a half so much, and then the next full year the prices fall and they plummet and they bottom. You're better off, instead of looking for coins to accumulate early on in the bear market, you're better off waiting, you know, 9 to 10 months before you even start looking. And that's going to save you a lot of money doing that.
Yeah. I've spoken out about how I hold, like, one of the coins I'm really bullish on, not financial advice, I'm literally not affiliated with them in any way, is Everest, like ticker ID. And it's gone down a good, like, 75% since the high of, like, when I was holding it. And for most things, I am openly, like, I do not want to hold alts. Like, I am cycling back into ETH currently with some of the things that I do think have, you know, the profit all-time high is, if I see it, I'm going to take it. And I'm not going to hate myself for getting out at a 3X if it has 100X. Like, I'll take the 3X and get out. And that's one of the one tokens where I'm like, I will hold this down to zero, be a moon bag. If it nothing happens, but I think this is like Chainlink at like 50 cents. We'll see. I will, you know, be proven wrong, perhaps, could be, but my conviction at this point, I you know, openly, I don't want to dump on the market. That would be cruel. So I'm not going to do that. I'll stick it out. But I agree that it's important to keep that perspective of, you know, I as well, like a week and a half ago, thank God I asked a friend about this, but there was a project and I think the official Telegram was hacked, because the official Telegram was like, what did it say? The official Telegram said something like, oh, we're now taking, we're opening up more spots for the pre-sale. And I click on it and it was a little sketchy. And it asked for like several things, and my friends were like, no, this is clearly a phishing scam. I was like, okay, thank you, because I was about to send these funds and like completely think I was getting in on like, oh, we've reopened, like, yay, thank you for interest. So important to stay safe out there, and when in doubt, like, I think it's important for people that are new to find other people, especially in crypto Twitter, and just ask people, because the amount of times I've been helped out just by people being like, this is an idiotic noob move, like, oh my gosh, probably saved me just beyond what I can ever repay them back for, with the amount of phishing scams or just poor decisions that I could have made. So yeah, I agree that there's lots of things in hindsight that even during this bull cycle can look back and be like, maybe not the best move, but we're learning.
Well, I would say, if I could, I would say that, you know, I lost at the time that ZRX that I had stolen was worth about $2,500, which was, like I said, money I'd wrote all the way down, and then, you know, got it back up and was feeling good about it, got it lost. But that $2,500 mistake has kept me later on, now that I'm worth millions, for making similar mistakes.
Right.
And so when it comes to, you know, I've got another guy that works for me. I did a video over the summer where he had lost 50% of his portfolio in a Uniswap phishing hack, which was basically where Uniswap, it got on Google Ads, or a fake Uniswap. It used Google Ads to put a Uniswap link at the top. He clicked on it and ended up giving his private key away and had half of his money stolen. It was like $30,000. But now, because of that mistake, he's much safer, and now he's done, you know, he's made a lot more than that back. And kind of, you know, kind of like we say, like, in the world of leverage trading, like, getting wrecked is part of the process. It just is. Like, going through that experience of doing something the wrong way helps you to get it right. And in your security, it's the same way. Most people that get into crypto, I believe, are going to at some point encounter a mistake where they lose money. Whether it's phishing, or whether it's a SIM card swap, or whether it's, you know, whatever the case may be, giving the wrong person the information, taking a picture of your private key and someone getting into your iCloud. A lot of people are going to make a mistake somewhere along the way. And usually it's near the beginning of their journey. And because of that, they end up actually learning the lesson for a much cheaper amount than they would later on if they were still careless with their security.
Yeah, agreed. I think security is actually one of the things that some of the projects that I'm more willing to hold long term, like if it's a project focused on security, because with the influx of new users in DeFi, because these teenagers are just not going to put up with traditional finance if they've just made a million X on, you know, one of the meme coin projects. I think that security feels like the next big wave of things that might not be as catchy as NFTs, but are a necessity. Agreed. And this is a bit in a different line, but do you know, like, when your birthday is? Anything about your own astrology? I'm curious.
When my own birthday is.
If you don't know,
can I call my wife real quick?
Yeah. Do you know your birthday?
Yeah, I do. I do know my own birthday.
Okay.
Believe it or not, I grew up with it. I was born with it. My birthday is I don't give the exact day away.
Sure.
But I am a Scorpio. I think they consider it a cusp. So I'm at the end of, when does Scorpio end?
It depends on the year, but it ends around November 19th, 20th, depending on the year.
So I think I'm a cusp on the beginning then. I'm almost a Sagittarius.
Okay, when's your...
Is that right?
Oh, well, it depends on the year, but if you feel like you... So this is an interesting, actually, myth, generally. There's some debate about this, but generally, like, the cusp is not a blending, but you probably have planets in Sagittarius, which make you feel like you have a blending of both. So, like, your sun might be in Scorpio, but I'd be interested. I mean, if you ever want to look into your own astrology, you know, hit me up. But you might have some other planets in Sagittarius. That would be interesting. But,
Here's something interesting. It sounds like my wife's birthday is almost your birthday.
Mine's August 24th, so...
Yeah, hers is very close to that.
Okay. Cool.
So I know you mentioned that earlier, and that's what I was saying. I was like, so she must be the same sign that you are. I don't know what she is.
Yeah. I'm a Virgo sun, but I have a lot of planets in Leo, so that's a bit about me. But yeah, I get along really well with Scorpios and Cancers, like water signs, because I don't have basically any water signs in my chart. That's cool though. Do you find that you're very, even if you're sharing a lot online, like, you're very private until you decide to share that online, especially around, like, your investment decisions, and, like, it's all very calculated, even if you're producing a lot of content?
Yeah, but then once, like, for instance, our portfolio, like, we wanted to keep that private for a long time, but then it was like, well, nobody else is transparent about their actual portfolio. What if we become the first channel to be transparent? Now we show it all the time, you know? So, like, we were very calculated with it, but then it was like, we want to always be transparent and show people what we're doing. It gives us credibility, but it also shows that we're not scared of, you know, people say all kinds of stuff online about, you know, you when you're in this business. And so we want people to know, like, we're not scared to be authentic and show who we are.
Yeah. Any last things that you would want newbies to know in the midst of a bull market to prepare for the bear market? Anything else that comes to mind?
Yeah, I would say the one thing to be, it's a very interesting kind of dichotomy in cryptocurrency where, in general, crypto is too good to be true, right? Like, imagine believing when Ethereum was at less than $100 that about a year later it would cross over 4,000. Like, that feels too good to be true, but yet it is true. And so what scammers and what impersonators and what trolls and all this, like, what they do on the internet is they prey on the fact that it already is too good to be true. And so when they tell you something that's even more outlandish, like, hey, if you just give me $1,000, I'll turn that into 10,000 for you. Like, you know, we get people all the time that ask me personally and ask through our social channels, like, do we do investments for people? Because there's a scam group called BitBoy Arbitrage, which we have nothing to do with, that is actually able to put Google ads on our YouTube videos, and we can't do anything about it. And, you know, people fall for that all the time. And so what I would tell people is just do everything you can to study and keep safe in this market, because that is the most important thing. Whether you get a 5x gain or a 10x gain or a 100x gain, it means nothing if you lose it. And so I would just really encourage everybody to do your homework on learning the Bitcoin cycles, learning what's real, learning how many impersonators there are out there for everybody. I'm sure you've got a ton of them as well.
it's so bad. I get DMs from people who will be like, hey, where's my 5 Bitcoin? And I'm like, excuse me. Exactly. And they're like, I telegrammed you. I sent you 1 Bitcoin. You were supposed to send me back 5. I'm like, I'm sorry, man, but I'm never going to be. No, that's not me. So, yeah, the scammers are insane.
Yeah.
Insane. Yeah.
Well, there's no free money in crypto.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like, you know, I just know, like, every year, you know, around Halloween, there's the stories that, like, teenagers are handing out drugs, you know, to trick-or-treaters, and you're like, no teenager gives away free drugs. That doesn't make any sense. That's how it is in crypto. Like, yes, crypto is great, and you can make a lot of money investing, but at the same time, like, nobody's going to give you free money, per se. There are airdrops, but scammers even use those airdrops to prey on people as well. Like, oh, you know, here's this project. That's actually the phishing scam that I fell for back in 2018, which was like, oh, here's this project. It sounds legit. They're giving away $500 worth of tokens, which seemed kind of believable. So you got to be specifically very careful around airdrops, because that is the one place where you could get some free money in crypto. But for the most part, there's nothing free in crypto. Nobody's just going to give you crypto for free. Almost every giveaway is a scam. And things like that. So you got to be really, really careful and pay attention to that. And, you know, I would say, you know, for us personally, we have a company that we pay $5,000 a month to manage our impersonators and try to get them off every platform and delete scam comments. So, you know, we're doing everything we can to fight them. But, you know, none of it does any good if the audience continues to fall for them. So just be really careful out there with your crypto. Like I said, even if you get a 100x gain, if you lose all your money, then you have zero.
Right. Totally agree with the too good to be true ease factor of it all, that I've even seen some people that they're not scammers, they're not lying, but some of the extreme gains or luck that they've had didn't just come from, you know, trading a bit well here and there. It came from, like, getting one really big lucky opportunity and then getting help out from some other thing. And so I think it's important to, I like to use the example of just, like, if I get 3x on something, I will take the 3x and I will not wait for the 100x. And so the person who might have made 1,000x on some BSC coin gets the story, but the people who, you know, lost a ton of money because they weren't able to get out because they weren't watching the chart or there was no exit liquidity or something, it's a fair example. And so I think playing it, like, you can make life-changing gains, but those life-changing gains don't need to be 1,000,000x life-changing gains, and almost chasing that can be really, really frightening to see. And often as well, the really advanced traders that aren't LARPing, that really do have these gains, they've been doing this for like 7-8 years. They didn't just enter this time. And so I agree with just being safe. And if something seems too good to be true, you know, don't ride. If you have those life-changing profits, lock them in, and that's something that will be my consideration. And I'm glad to have found people like you who can lead noobs through this cycle and aren't saying, you know, just hold it in, like, put it all into Doge, because there was a point where I was close to doing that for a video. And in one hand, I'm sad I didn't, because I would be up incredible gains. On the other hand, I'm kind of glad that I didn't, because who knows if I would have held, if I would have sold, you know, if it goes down, like, whatever. So yeah, I agree with a lot of what was said there.
Awesome.
Well, thank you so much for coming on today and being on a lot of the same page and providing some helpful things for myself and some other people more new to the space. And look forward to seeing what else you have to share and your guidance further into this bull cycle.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you so much for having me on. Like I told you when, you know, you contacted me, like, I watch your stuff on TikTok, and I'm a big fan of yours as well. So definitely thanks for having me on.